Reporter Joe Donnelly wrote about his quest to try to track down what may be the lone gray wolf in California. And just to give you an idea of that article, one of the intriguing quotes is, "How we live with wolves is how we live with nature, either in harmony or in discord. The choice is ours to make." I don't know how we live with these crazy people in Washington, but that's an animal of another stripe. Sometimes it feels like we're dealing with children, but we'll save that for the second half when we focus on the politics of climate change as well as our country, as well as our economy. By the way, if you're on Huffington Post, green section, I have a story there that I put in on Monday. If you put my name in there, it should pop up. It's our climate is shutting down. Who's concerned about that? And I think you might find that interesting because I always look at the world through green lenses. And, of course, as all this distraction and arguing about the budget and now the debt ceiling controversy coming right up, what gets put on the back burner? Well, just our climate, just our future. And if they can't agree on a budget and avoid shutting the government down or even opening it back up for business, does not bode well for how they're ever going to agree on something as important and ridiculously controversial, quote, in quotes. It shouldn't be controversial, it's science. So lots to talk about this hour, and glad you're joining us. I want to welcome to the program reporter Joe Donnelly with Orion Magazine. Hey, Joe.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Really eager to hear about this story. Very well written. I didn't get all the way through it. I didn't want to spoil it. Did you ever find that wolf you were looking for? But perhaps we should start with what prompted you to go out, not only to dig up this story, but actually to go out into wolf territory.
Well, I mean, it was kind of a metaphysical quest. So in a sense, I did find the wolf I was looking for, but thankfully, I didn't find OR7, which is the scientific designation for that particular gray wolf, which traveled a long way from northeastern Oregon all the way down into the Sierras in California.
Is it correct that this is the first wild wolf to come into the Golden State in more than eight decades?
Yeah, I believe, and I don't have the story in front of me, but I believe the last wolf was eradicated from California in 1924 in Lassen County, which is ironically, as I point out in the story, where the hero of my story, OR7, who has sometimes been called Journey by his fans, ended up traveling to and near and staking out a territory in that area. Around Lassen and Trinity County and some other counties in that general vicinity for a long time last summer and fall and into the winter. But yeah, it was the first wild wolf on record in California since, I believe, 1924.
Now, the first thing that pops into my mind is, you know, we've done stories on animals, large and small, that have had to move north as the climate and weather change. This one is heading south, so does it have anything to do with our changing climate?
Well, he's headed back north again. He seems to be following a similar pattern where in the spring of this year, after spending much of the summer and winter in California, he headed back into Oregon, back into southeastern Oregon around the Klamath Falls area. He seems to be spending some time around that area now, and I wouldn't be surprised if he heads back into California again sometime around the same time he first entered, which is in late December. He first entered into California in late December 2011, and I think he's, you know, I think he's just staking out a massive territory, and I don't think it has a lot to do with climate change. I think it has to do with, you know, following available resources for him, which would probably have to do with deer migrations and that sort of thing.
And could that have anything to do with it, or is deer migration also unrelated to the changing climate and looking for cooler climates. I don't mean to sound like I've got a one-track mind here, but I sometimes feel like I do. Just want to rule that out and then obviously talk about what are the other factors leading to this wandering wolf travels.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think we know fully all the effects that climate change are having on our natural cycles, whether they be, you know, atmospheric or terrestrial or flora or fauna. But I feel safe in saying that it's affecting everything. what exactly they are, I think, will take in terms of the migratory paths of predator and prey. I don't think those studies have been done yet, but you know, I would imagine you know, everything's being affected. I mean, I know hibernation cycles of bears are being affected, and you know, there's a whole cascade of effects when you start changing the ecosystem the way climate change is changing ecosystems. But I mean, right now, I think that our OR7 is probably just following available prey, and also, you know, he has a biological imperative. He's searching for a mate somewhere, maybe not particularly consciously, but certainly subconsciously. And you know, he struck out in California, and you know, he may.
Those California girls are hard.
They are, you know. He wishes they all could be California girls, but you know, he might have found you know, it a little bit lonely in terms of the comfort of the fairer sex in California. But you know, so, and he's marked his way. You know, the whole, I think, you know, as the crow flies, it's some 800 to 1,000 miles from where he started, and he's marked his way, and you know, he's set out markers for himself to follow. So, I mean, to me, the romantic part of the story would be if he actually headed home and sort of found his way back. But that's highly unlikely that that's really what's on his mind.
Now, you called him OR7. I guess the OR stands for Oregon. Does this mean it's the seventh wolf that they've identified and are tracking?
The seventh wolf that they collared, put a radio collar on in Oregon when wolves first started recolonizing Oregon, coming over from Idaho, and that process began years ago, but you know, took hold in earnest around 2009-2010 in northeastern Oregon.
Now, we use the expression often in conversation, the lone wolf, but what traditionally, historically, you know, is the pattern for wolves? Do they travel alone or in packs? And what does it signify that this one is going it alone?
Well, lone wolf is an anomaly. You know, wolves do strike out on their own, particularly wolves with alpha tendencies, which I would I'm pretty sure this wolf has. He's a very healthy and large offspring of OR4, who is the alpha wolf of the Imnaha pack in northeastern Oregon. And OR4 is a very large wolf. And you know, so their imperative for certain members of the pack is to strike out and establish new territories and packs. It's you know, for the survival of the species. One of the human subjects in this story, Wally Sykes, has been an activist in the cultural wars around wolves up in northeastern Oregon. I think said to me, wolves tend to move fearlessly into a vacuum. They kind of like nature. They abhor a vacuum, and a land without wolves to them is a vacuum. So they're trying to establish territories and settle. They're wolves and man. I believe throughout history have been the most successful at establishing domain. Wolves, of course, with much less deleterious effects on the environment than man.
Now, tell us a little bit about your search for OR7. You had to not only go way out into pretty wild territory, but go out looking at night. Is that correct? And then, if so, How brave are you? And were you armed with anything? And what did a wolf do if it encountered you, or you encountered it?
No, I'm not brave at all. I don't want the literary effect of what I did to be overblown. As I said, my quest was more of a spiritual and metaphysical quest in a lot of ways. There was something about this wolf's story, his movement all the way into California, into, metaphorically speaking, my backyard, that really inspired me. At the time that I read about this, and then just a little news item, it was the winter of Occupy, as I said, there's a lot of things that weren't very hopeful in the news and going on a personal and on a grander political level in the country. And I just thought there was something so inspiring about this. Wolves have been called the lords of nature, and in some literature, there's something so inspiring about this. Messenger of nature, of nature's resilience. Boldly. Stepping into, what in a lot of ways could be looked at as a crumbling civilization. And, to me, saying, look, you guys can mess up all you want, but, nature is going to come back. And, I'm here to send that message. And I found it very inspiring. I found it very hopeful. I wanted him to be successful. I wanted him to survive, and I wanted him to break trail so that other wolves could be in our backyard, and other symbols, and other, not just symbols, but other essential elements of nature could come back and thrive in our backyards while we screw everything else up.
and how
does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It makes eminent sense, actually. And I like that spiritual journey because, it's difficult to be a sensitive human being these days with not only the craziness in our nation's capital going on and getting worse by the minute, but what's happening to nature. And for, most people who are tuned into, nature as, not only essential to our survival, but all the other critters out there and what's happening and what we're doing, what man is doing.
Let me be clear, if I may, wolves were nearly exterminated by the same forces that are, ruining our climate and environment now, and in a lot of ways by the same forces that are ruining our political system. It's
Republicans.
I'm not sure about all the political affiliations of the industries and imperatives in question, but this was manifest destiny. This was the idea that everything on and under the earth belongs to man and is for man's exploitation, and therefore our economic is there for economic imperatives. And the fact that something that we had come so close to eradicating in our, self-interest and greed and lack of stewardship over the environment, the fact that it's making a comeback, and who better than the wolf, this symbol of power and this this animal that inspires so much idiotic fear on the part of human beings. Who better than the wolf to sort of carry that message was the way I was looking at this.
Hmm. And is the gray wolf on the endangered list, Joe?
No, unfortunately, the feds have delisted the gray wolf. It's a controversial decision, but after an incredibly heroic effort to bring gray wolves back into the Northern Rockies, which I encourage everyone to delve into investigating that story. But in the mid-90s, an incredibly, incredibly inspiring effort by the feds to bring the gray wolves back has been deemed successful enough to return control over the gray wolf populations to the states, and particularly in Wyoming and Idaho. and Montana, where, you know, the wolves were first brought back. You know, the effects of returning that management to the states, which, you know, are primarily Republican legislatures and, you know, are very very sensitive to the desires of the ranching and, you know, extraction industries. You know, hunting season has been open on wolves, and you know, the effects have been so far to, you know, right now cut the population in half in these areas from about more than 2,000 or around 2,000 to about 1,000 right now. And, you know, the trend isn't encouraging. Wolves are very resilient and, you know, they may yet survive, but you know, in two hunting seasons in the Northern Rockies, the population has been cut in half. So I don't like the direction it's going. And also, you know, not to mention, you asked before about social patterns of wolves a little bit. They're social animals. They're, you know, they live in extended families, and these hunts tend to tear those families apart. And, you know, it's akin to tearing, you know, human families and you know, villages and extended families and social networks apart. It has a really bad long-term effect.
You're saying it's kind of like humans when we get so dispersed from our family and community connections. It doesn't bode well for our mental, physical, spiritual health.
Yeah, exactly, and it can bring about the types of it can obviously lead to the types of behaviors that you know, you're supposedly managing the population for. You take the parents away from, you know, juveniles and children, and you know, they don't know the rules, and you know, they're going to be the ones who get in trouble by taking sheep and calf and stuff like that, because they're trying to survive. They're trying to survive without you know, the safety and support of the pack, and you know, it's just horrible. I mean, you know, how, imagine snatching parents away from children. That's what happens.
Good point. And why should we humans be concerned about the wolf? I mean, many people would say it's just a predator, and I mean, we're talking about some of that, but what else perhaps may people not be aware of, just in terms of why it's important to keep all species alive, but the important, unique role of the wolf in the landscape?
Well, the wolf is, you know, an apex predator, and we've had enough experience with seeing how the environment has responded to the reintroduction of gray wolves in Yellowstone and the area, Yellowstone Park and the area, to know that, you know, where wolves are healthy, the environment is healthy. They have what is known as a trophic cascade of effects on the environment. For instance, they move herds of ungulates, deer and elk, and around so that they don't get complacent and stomp down stream beds and, you know, eat all the vegetation out of riparian areas, where which can lead to the, you know, deoxidization of streams because there's no shade and cover, which has a bad effect on the fish, and, you know, so on down the line. Since wolves have been reintroduced in the Yellowstone, the wetlands have come back, the deer and elk herds are actually healthier. You know, everything's working more in balance. Bush and berry seeds are being spread around because of, you know, birds who finish off wolf kills and, you know, travel with wolves, carry seeds, you know, with them that fall off wolves, you know, fur and everything else. And it's just the whole thing works better. Wolves are much better managers of you know, wildlands than man will ever be.
And we just have a couple minutes left, Joe. What is the greater message here? I mean, I live in a suburban area, Northern California, Marin County, and we have coyotes, we have deer, we have raccoons, we have, you know, the usual skunk, and of course smaller critters. But increasingly, you know, there are coyotes keeping, you know, residents up at night here. And on the one hand, I'm always charmed when I'm, you know, driving home up the hill and there's, you know, a family of deer. herd of deer, whatever the expression is, and then they start eating the plants, and then people get perturbed, and if there's too many deer or the coyotes are, you know, howling too much at night, then they start complaining. Is this a sign that we're encroaching into their territory? I've always assumed that, and how can we find that balance?
Well, I mean, people are complaining about how coyotes keeping them up at night with their howling. Tough luck. My answer to that.
Put on your sound machine, right?
Can you imagine a more... Now think of a wolf howling at night. That would be, take the nattering of a coyote and increase its spine tingling factor by about 20, and imagine how lucky you would be to hear that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, I guess it depends on your outlook, but I mean, I think the basic point is, live with nature. Don't try and subjugate it. That's the only way we're going to have a healthy approach to, living on this planet. When we try and separate out the things that we live amongst, the natural things that we live amongst from us, we're separating ourselves out from the entirety and the whole of nature, which has been, disastrous as we see. It's not a sustainable approach to living.
Hmm. And any other parting thoughts, Joe?
I have no idea if I'm making any sense.
You're making a lot of sense. Absolutely. And it was a beautifully written article, and I'm going to go back and finish all of it. But what are you working on next? You said you were in the process of editing something, and you were happy that I interrupted you. What can we look forward to next in Orion Magazine?
That was a freelance piece for Orion that I was, very happy to work with. Andrew Blackman, a great editor there, and, he's as much a collaborator on that piece as I am in a lot of ways. But, I am the executive editor of Mission in State, missioninstate.org, which is a narrative and investigative journalism website, and that keeps me busy most of the time. It's unfortunately all too infrequent that I get to go out and do great stories like the wolf story. I don't mean I did them great. It's just they're what inspire us as journalists to do. So yeah, I'm looking for my next one.
And since you were on a bit of a spiritual quest, as you said, did you come away feeling satisfied or sad or a combination other emotions?
All of that. The story is ongoing. I want to be hopeful and. I think I will bet on the resiliency of wolves in this case, and keep my spirits up. The sooner they have a thriving population in California, where they historically have been and belong, the better I'll feel about a lot of things.
That makes two of us, and I hope others as well. Joe, last question. Where can people find the article? It's really worth reading.
Thanks. They can either pick up a copy of Orion Magazine, a beautiful magazine, at their newsstand or bookstore. Or they can go to orionmagazine.org, and it's up there and on the homepage.
Thank you, Joe Donnelly, and thank you, Eric Hoffner, for turning me on to this story. It's not the kind of thing I usually do. We usually focus on the human side of our environmental challenges and solutions, but of course. Animals are a huge part of nature, and we are a huge part of animals' lives and what we're doing to intervene, oftentimes not for the better. So I'm going to do more of these stories because, it's out of sight, out of mind for many Americans, but that's part of the problem, isn't it?
Yes, well, absolutely. You nailed it. Thank you so much for having me on and for, bringing the circle full.
Okay. It is the circle of life, and let's keep it going here. When we come back, we're going to move on to our topic that I've often talked about here on the Green Front, and that is climate change, the politics, and Michael Mann, no one less than the guy who invented the hockey stick and the author of the hockey stick and the climate wars, will join us on the Green Front. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, no one knows that better than our next